podcast of The Neil Haley Show and Celebrity Interviews, live from the Grotto with Greg Hanna. Greg, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing amazing. I'm so excited, too, because we're going to have this incredible guest that everybody knows him as John Kreese from Cobra Kai, but we're going to get to know him today as Ambrose Massey.
All right. So, Martin. Hey, Martin, how are you? Thanks for stopping by, Martin.
Thank you.
So talk about your career in acting. Did you always want to be an actor growing up?
Yeah, I think since the fourth grade, you know, I remember doing a play and in the fourth grade, and I just liked acting very much and, you know, went for it and always did a lot of plays in school. And then I don't think I did much about it till I was, I guess, I got a job once with Sean Connery. Actually, I don't remember the studio. It was Columbia. And I was Sean Connery's stand-in in a movie called The Anderson Tapes. And I remember getting accepted to the fifth year of school, I think at the School of the Arts at NYU, and at the same time being accepted to a classical repertory company in the Village in New York. And I remember going up to him and saying, what would you do? Would you continue school? You know, or would you just join the repertory? And he said to me, young man, if you can do Antigone, you can do anything. Which means do the Greek classics, you can do anything. So I joined the repertory, left school. And then, you know, just did a lot of plays in New York and Lincoln Center and a few things and off Broadway. And then went to Hollywood, I guess, in 74, you know.
Well, that's pretty amazing. That's exciting. One of my favorite actors that you got to play with. That's cool. You know, tell me, what's it like, you know, being able to work with your son, Jesse, on some of these projects?
Well, it's a lot of fun. It's very relaxing because we know each other so well. And I can give him little tips here and there. If we get a strong director, I don't have to do anything. If you get someone who's, you know, who's focusing on so many other things at the same time as directors do, I take Jesse aside and I give him a couple of notes. But, you know, he's so free with his instrument now that it's very exciting. I you know, years ago, I would make suggestions on his auditions. And now I don't have to. He uses his instrument very well, you know, and he's really good in this movie. And the movie we just finished, another Western called The Gunfighter's Deal. And he plays a coward in a Western town. And he makes a deal with the devil to be the fastest gun in the West. And it's a good little script. And then he wants to renege it because he's killing too many people. And terrific little Western. And he's very good in it. Very good.
So did Jesse always want to be an actor? Did you push him into it? I think this is as a father myself with kids and saying what, or did he really want to do it?
No, I mean, there's so much emotional stress. You want to push your kid, you know, these stage mothers and stage fathers, I don't know how they can do it. I would never push my kid into this business. It's so full of rejection and emotional stress. And, you know, I think the thing I tell most young actors is if they don't hire you, it's their mistake. And I tell them to watch shows like The Offer, which is all about tenacity and all about Al Ruddy making The Godfather and how many obstacles he had. So, you know, I didn't want him to go into the business. And ultimately, he just liked it, did an off-Broadway play when he was 18 and transitioned into just a lovely human being. And he really cares and he's not tainted by Hollywood. And he's been around movie stars and their children and movie sets for the longest time, and he's still very grounded.
What influences did you have, Martin, you know, as you were learning to act, and maybe even today, you know, actors that you watched growing up, maybe parts that you're playing today that you draw from those performances in the past that you've watched and so on?
Well, I made the mistake of trying to be Steve McQueen for the first 25 years of my career, you know. I mean, I was always trying. I love Steve McQueen. I love Paul Newman, you know. And I think eventually, you know, you just get to that point where you can use your instrument to be Marty Cove. You know, John Creese is definitely, God knows where the venom comes from for John Creese in my body, because, you know, I'd rather do vulnerable roles. I'd rather do soft things, and I'm a romantic at heart. So, but there's a lot of stuff that comes up for John Creese that's easy for me to do. But I'd much rather do, like we did that Hallmark movie a couple of years ago, and it was on 2 weeks ago, and I'm a chef, you know, and he's a romantic character, and he, you know, has a restaurant, and his daughter is a chef as well. And it's just marvelous. And, you know, we did a scene, and all the crew came up to me after I did a scene about my mother leaving me the restaurant, and they were all in tears. So I kind of love that stuff, you know. I think vulnerability is, I think, more enjoyable to play. Some people like to play the tough guy. I don't, you know.
You know, you talk about your instrument. Seems like you really are a student of the game in acting, if you talk about that, especially with your son and talking about, define instrument for me. And I never heard that as an actor use that language for acting.
I remember studying with a couple of people, John Lenn and Milton Gonzalez, and they would refer to things as your body as an instrument and learn to cultivate your body and your mind. It's a very spiritualistic attempt to really control why certain situations call for certain thoughts. And I believe in, you know, I started doing my homework at a very late age, where backstories for every character rarely come in to the script. They just don't. A little bit they do, but you've got to fill in between the lines with where this guy was, with his women of his life, his mother, you know, where he was having an occupation, what are his relationships to his father, to his brothers, you know, it's very interesting to create all that for the characters as a backstory, and then you let it go, and then you just go into the script, because the script rarely has a lot of information about the background of the people you play. And as a young actor, I was lazy to do that. And I think now I wouldn't think of doing a character, you know, all the characters, I guess I did three movies during the strike, and they all had waivers. So I was able to get into them, and it was fascinating, because you just create a history for these people, and that instrument, that I guess that body that we have formulates itself into that character, because you know the past, you know where he's been. It's like asking you, where have you been, you know, yesterday and the day before. And then if I put you in the same position, you got to go see another doctor, even though you saw five doctors yesterday. You know that it's not a pleasant experience, but you're going to have to go because you have a bad knee, you know, and this is a great orthopedic doctor. And you go there, but you have an attitude, because the last 2 days you didn't like the doctors who you went to see. So you kind of have a familiarity with certain aspects of emotionality, and you just use them, and it's fun. It's a lot more fun to act that way than winging it, you know.
Yeah, you know, Martin, there were a lot of years between like The Karate Kid and Cobra Kai, the series, when it came out. Was it exciting to jump back in? And, you know, had you thought about maybe down the road after Karate Kid all those years, you know, getting into a series again about it? Or,
you know, it was always interesting to see the reaction of the Karate Kid fans. You know, it carried on over 10 years. I mean, and you realize it was such a hit movie.
Yeah. You know?
And then all of a sudden, you do other things, and you don't really think about the Karate Kid anymore. That was a tough guy, one-dimensional cartoon character, you know, and you want to do other things. And then I walked into Cagney and Lacey, and they allowed me to go out and do The Karate Kid and go out and do Rambo. And, you know, eventually you do Wyatt Earp. You do some of these movies, but they were all kind of tough guys, you know? So when I signed on for the series, the movie has, you know, had become such a religious experience to so many people because of bullying, because of a variety of aspects of the writing. So when I signed on, met with Hayden Schlossberg and Josh Heald and John Hurwitz, I said, I want to play this guy vulnerable. I don't want to play him like I did the movies. I want to, you know, have him have some vulnerability, learn why he's such an asshole, you know, why he's so difficult, why he's so tough. And they wrote that in. And, you know, they accommodated me. And now we're doing season six, and that's all mixed in. And it's all exciting to play. But I like playing vulnerability more than playing tough. I always have. But, you know, you look like me. You know, you don't look like, you know, what's his name? Elvis Costello. So it's, you know, you just get to that space. And what I'm developing now with my son is an older gunfighter with a 12-year-old kid, and they team up to get the bad guys in the Old West. And it's a wonderful story of moral fiber being exchanged, and it's about heroes. And now that the audiences are so sophisticated, more so than the days of Karate Kid, they're open to really intelligent filmmaking, you know?
Wow. You know, you talk about, that was great that your character kind of, as I'm a former professional wrestler, it's going back into professional wrestling. I know you were getting your iPad ready and stuff, and maybe you heard that in the background in the green room. What's happening is you were the biggest heel in the world, kind of turned a little bit babyface during the movies, then come back into this where you're a good guy in so many ways, and people start to really trust you, and then you turn on all of them again. That's got to be one of the best characters in the world, where you're like, okay, we trust this guy, and bam, you turn heel. That's the biggest, like the Rock right now on WWE, how he turned heel on all the fans, and the fans started to hate him. Isn't it fun doing that turn? You got to love that turn.
You know, writers see that first. You know, they see the transitions first. Because I had, my birthday was Wednesday, so I had dinner with the writers, you know, they took me out. And we talked about that. We talked about, does the actor realize the transition that he makes? Because we actors, we want more. We want more. I want more in that show. I wanted more in Kagi and Lacey. Do you see the transitions that the writers make for you when they're really astute? These guys are astute. They had perception of the characters a year, 2 years before I came with them. I came with them with notes at the beginning of season three saying, this is what I want to do with the character, make transitions. I met with mercenaries. I met with Army Rangers. I met with so many people, and they already knew what I wanted, you know? And it's fun to do the transitions, but you got to really see it. Season six, a lot of transitions. But sometimes as an actor, you don't see them in as great depth as the writers do, you know? And yes, it is exciting to play once you get it. You gotta get it and get over the ego and get over that, you know, you want to be a hero. You want to be cool. You want to do Steve McQueen, you know? And then you realize that you're set up to do what you just said, to make a transition into darkness again. But then the light is even brighter because you came from a darker place than you did 40 years ago, you know? Well, I hope you understand that, because it's really...
No, it makes, as a wrestler, I totally understand it. And I know how to tell those storylines, because I literally was down south in a organization almost like Jerry Lawler's, where I was tag teaming with the top babyface, and they always trusted the big giant. But when I turned on him in Poplar Bluff, Missouri on TV, that place went freaking bananas and they wanted to kill me. And it was the best turn possible, because they trust you. They love you. Why would you do that? That's what a movie, a television show, professional wrestling, when there's a story, you put your heart into it and that character, and then, man, they turned on me. And it's like a wow factor. And especially in streaming, next episode, there's got to be something else. No, let's say it's the next season. I have to wait. And we're waiting a lot longer for the next season, Greg.
It's fascinating. You know, I've always had a great respect for writers. And when I was under contract for a couple of movies years ago by a company, I read a lot of scripts, and the respect I had for writers just soared. You know, it's so difficult to discipline yourself and create well, you know, just sort of put yourself in a room and stop life and just work on cue cards and index cards and create characters. It's really tough. And I have especially on the Cobra Kai, you know, the staff writers and all, I just love what they do. I've got stuff coming up that has blown me away. And I can't wait to do it. It's like having a new love affair with acting, you know, and it's all because of the writing.
Totally.
Martin, what similarities, if any, do you see between the John Reese character in Cobra Kai and Ambrose Massey in Farhaven?
Well, you know, the ambition of John Kreese is a little different than Ambrose Massey, because Ambrose is doing terrible things to buy up the land for a very commercial reason, so he can become rich and own and be powerful. You know, I don't think any moral fiber. It's interesting. There is moral fiber there because he wants the West he wants the town to be like it was. You know, like, you know, Bruce Boxleitner and I created a backstory where the two of us arrived in that town of Farhaven and created the commercialism. I created, you know, things a little more in the commercial world, and he created things in the rural world, you know, with ranches and horses and cattle. And now I want to own all of it. And, you know, he is very happy in his ranch, but he doesn't want anything to change. And my character, I don't want anything to change. I want to buy everybody's ranch and make it all look like, what is that great ranch with Taylor Sheridan bought it in Texas? The couple hundred thousand acres. And both characters want to go back to the way things were, simpler, but my character wants to do it as a rich man, and Bruce's character wants to do it as just a rancher, you know, with a great deal of integrity. Mm-hmm. So how you compare it to John Kreese? I don't think John Kreese has a lot of ambition in the sense of wealth. He just wants, it's very personal because he loves Johnny Lawrence, and now he doesn't love Johnny Lawrence until we have some surprises later on, you know, in season. But, you know, there's a great deal of moral fiber and integrity in John Kreese. He just doesn't have the patience to deal with others who don't have that. He just don't do what you do in the ring and snap, break them, throw them out the window. You know, he just doesn't have that because he's been through it. He's been through it in Vietnam. He understands what it's like to be amoral. He understands what it's like to be in a marshmallow society with kids are turning into marshmallows, and there's no heroes for kids. There's no goddamn heroes for kids. So, you know, he's into creating a triumphant character like Johnny Lawrence into the hero.
Right.
He tried to be a hero himself, but he failed. He bent the rules too much.
Right.
And now, information, but it extends him into creating a hero, and I think that's what we need today. It's just what we need.
It goes back to the backstory, Greg. The backstory of the characters in Cobra Kai that we didn't find out in Karate Kid, and they did a heck of a lot better job than the last Matrix. I just watched it finally. No, that backstory was horrid. But this backstory is so good because we finally know why John Kreese was John Kreese in Cobra Kai. If you watch, I don't like giving things away, but your son playing that character really saw, oh my gosh, you weren't that horrible person. You know what I mean? That people thought right. you were. It had to do, you went through things in life that caused you to become that kind of guy. Would you say the character in Farhaven also in ways to become this power hungry, powerful person is based on his childhood? Because it looks like childhood or certain times of life that happens, even though they probably didn't tell that backstory.
I believe that when, you know, if you think about characters like James Dean or Marlon Brando, or any of those people, they had miserable youths. They just did. And when they got to be actors and you put the camera on them or they go on stage, they had so much in here, so much to pour out. I had a different story. You know, I was adopted and I had two loving parents and they sacrificed a lot for me and gave me everything. But there's a lot of people that had abusive parents. There's a lot of people that had neglectful parents, alcoholic parents, and all that stuff molds you into something that you have to graduate from into normality, you know, into what's acceptable in society. And I hate to say it, but it does help the acting. It does help bringing up those emotions, because I think about, you know, I mean, I was my lady friend, Mary Squire. I remember when I was in prison in season 5, how many times, and we were breaking up, how many times I would draw upon that experience of what I was going through in my personal life with trying to break out of jail, trying to get out of jail. How do I do this? How do I make this relationship work? How do I get out of jail? And one fed the other.
That's only.
That's just the way it is. You know, John Kreese was literally a product of Vietnam, of winning everything until he became a soldier in Vietnam. And then he wasn't allowed to win because most of our kids were not allowed to win back in those days. They just weren't allowed to win in that war, you know? And he's a product from that. And that writer's built upon that. Just like Robert Kamen built upon the Marine sergeant he had, the sensei he had was worse than John Kreese. He told me that himself. He says, my sensei was worse than yours. He was a drill sergeant in the Marines.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So a question for you. I happened to get a look at a clip when you were talking to Bruce Boxleitner in Farhaven, and you were, you know, trying to get him to let you buy his land again, right? And take it from him. And you said a couple of words, and then the two of you just had this almost like what you weren't saying. You were just like kind of staring at each other in a certain way, and the expressions, and, you know, even Bruce's wife, you know, it was a very powerful, you know, few moments in that scene with nothing being said. What was going through your mind, or how did you guys, you know, come to that resolve to make that scene so perfect?
This backstory I was telling you about, you know, that Bruce and I discussed. Bruce and I, we go to the hole in the wall every year where Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid used to hide out. And we go on 5 days in Chaps and Dusters on horseback rides. And both of us are really into the West. And, you know, we created this relationship where both of us arrived. And it wasn't written that way. There was no documentation that you know, Massey and Bruce's character arrived and developed that town 25 years ago. But we created that. Yeah. And so it's very hard for me to try and lie to him, because he knows me so well, saying that, hey, you know, these Apaches, they, you know, it's very dangerous out here. You should go into town. I'll buy your ranch. I'll do you a favor. It's very hard to lie to a really, it's like trying to lie to a good friend. They can read you. They know. So all those pauses, like it's like the pauses I have with Johnny Lawrence. There's so much history between John Kreese and Johnny Lawrence. There's so much history, imaginary history, between Ambrose and Bruce's character, that that's what you read. And many, many times, I think, in movies, the less said, the more you can read because of the history of the characters or the history of the plot or the history just of the last couple of days, makes the work richer. It's like you as an audience member, when we watched Magnum P.I. or Cagney Lacey, you invited those people as friends into your living room to watch them on the small TV. But when you wanted to see Sean Connery and you wanted to see Peter O'Toole or Jack Nicholson, you had to pay $20 to go and watch them on the big screen. And that was the difference between the mystique of the movie star and, you know, the characters today. But there's a mix today, so you don't have that problem anymore. And so Bruce and I have been around for so long that we want to make things more interesting and created this history between the characters so that the sequel can be like that, you know?
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. All right. So, Martin, I went ahead and, you know, social media, shared in my Facebook group after I saw a post, it was your birthday, saying, and I told my fans on my, in my Facebook group, I was going to sing happy birthday to you. So I'm going to sing happy birthday to you. Then Greg is going to go ahead and ask his final question. And then I said something else to my social media group as well, or on one podcast, because I do a lot of shows and I'm always doing stuff. All right. I am one of the worst singers in the world. Ready, guys? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Martin. I won't call you Marty. Happy birthday to you.
Good Thank job. You very much. Thank you very much. Every, you know, the IMDb and all those Wikipedia, they all have me older than I am. And I, you know, you send them passports, you send them licenses, they still don't change anything. But it doesn't even matter anymore, you know? As long as you stay in good shape, you got good family relationship, you're getting a little older, as long as you stay healthy. I think that a lot of the Cobra Kai success has allowed one to really, I must have gotten 50 texts from birthday wishes yesterday. Some of them don't say who they are. They just put a phone number, like, you know, they expect you to remember. And I wish I did remember who they were, because so many things were, there were so many wonderful, you know, well wishers and moments that they talk about, but I don't remember, you know. So it was a great day. It was a really good day. And thank you very much for that rendition. That was
You're fantastic. Welcome. I it was a dream, because I'm a big, as a wrestling guy we call marks, I'm a big mark for Cobra Kai and Karate Kids. So to get the chance to talk to you today has been amazing. Greg, go ahead with your celebrity question. And this is a deep question, Martin, so get ready.
All right.
Well, first of all, you know, Mark, let me say what an honor and privilege this has been, you know, for me. I enjoyed you in all the movies and everything that you've done, and I love watching Cobra Kai and so on. So I really appreciate the time that we've had and that you've set aside for us. It's been an honor.
And
I asked Jesse the same question. I had the privilege of being able to interview him last year on Celebrity Interviews Live from the Grotto as well. And I asked him the same question, so I can't wait to hear your response. So tell me, Martin, what's the most important thing in life you feel you've ever learned?
There's a dual answer to that, I think. I think that from a professional standpoint, good work is a key for me now, today. I could never violate a moment in a script and fake it. You know, I just rather not do the project. And family. I don't think on your deathbed or in the hospital, your last director or producer are going to show up. Who's going to show up is family. The value of family is what I've learned. And, you know, it's really interesting that people throw around this word iconic, icon and legend and all this. And I don't think of myself as an icon or a legend. To me, the icons and legends, Jack Nicholson, Sean Connery, Anthony Hopkins, Peter O'Toole, those are icons, Marlon Brando. Yet to this generation, Billy Zabka said to me one day, I said, why don't people think we're icons? They throw these words around. And he said, because this generation thinks of us as that. They didn't have John Wayne or Clint or John Garfield or Spencer Tracy or any of those people, or Humphrey Bogart. You know, they didn't have that. So it finally made sense to me, you know? And yet I think I've gone the opposite direction. I've gone into humility with this kind of success rather than being, you know, a putz, difficult, you know, egocentric, you know? And so I think I've learned, to answer your question with a long-winded answer, I think I've learned a lot about integrity as a massive, important value to me. And I'm still learning about humility. Still yes. learning about that.
Wonderful. All right. So speaking of humility, another thing I called, if I'm going to be talking to John Kreese right now, and I see you could beat up, you know, Johnny Lawrence and Ralph Macchio. Guess what? You know what? You're not going to beat up me. Former professional wrestler coming back into the ring. I'm going to challenge John Kreese / Martin Cove to a pro wrestling match at a later time during my documentary to get in the ring with me. Just going to challenge you right now to this. See if you're scared, chicken.
No, I'll get in the ring with you. I got in the ring with Larry Holmes for 3 rounds. Ooh. So, but it was 1990 at a celebrity boxing event. So I'm not in that good a shape anymore. But I'm glad you would get in the ring. I don't know if I'll fight you in the ring, but I'll get in the ring with you. a couple of moves. And yeah, I'll do it in your documentary. Sure.
Oh, I love it. So I will talk to your agent and we'll get this done. And that's an awesome thing in the match, you know, because the late Harley Race knocked me out in a match. So I was wrestling Cowboy Bob Orton and Harley was in the corner. And then Harley Race, and that was when I was still in my 20s. And, it, you know, gimmicked, knocked me out, Harley Race. And Harley, yeah, so another legend.
Well, I know, you know, I did a couple of movies of the week with Hulk Hogan. And we did this thing, Shadow Warriors, you know, and I went to a couple of matches, wrestling matches. And then that wonderful, wonderful young lady who's a dentist, who's a wrestler, Britt. And,
oh, yeah. And she's in Pittsburgh, too. She's in Pittsburgh, yeah. too. Dr. Britt. Yeah.
Good girl. Good girl. And I went to see a couple of matches of hers. And, you know, it's hairy. It's really hairy. And you guys really, you know, it's so, you take a lot of hits because there's no way all that stuff doesn't hurt.
No.
You know.
Getting back in the ring and taking bumps the last couple of weeks, it hurt at first. And I'm like, oh, you know what? I don't need to take bumps. I'm 6'10", 290. I'll wait to the shows. Because
yeah.
I was feeling it, man.
Of course, of course. And, you know, there's not a double that comes in and takes the hits. It does the thing like in the movies. So I really respect what you all do. And it's, you know, it's a marvelous show. I love it as it's a show. And it's really, if you look at it like that, it's terrific. And the physicality, I mean, you guys have to be in such good shape and you have to.
That's what I'm working on for September when we start shooting. So that's the big thing.
You have to develop. And I have a great deal of respect because, you know, I remember as a little kid growing up in Brooklyn, my father would watch, Man Mountain Dean, Haystacks Calhoun, and was one other one I remembered. Man Mountain Dean, Haystacks Calhoun, and some other guy. And this was on black and white television, I think, in WPIX, Channel 11. And I remember these guys, and they weren't in good shape at all. They were just big, like sumo wrestlers.
Yeah.
And I never realized how much, how how good athletes they had to be, even though they were not attractive. They were fast, and the breasts were low, and their bellies were big, but they bounced and hit the ring. And now I realize, if I could find that footage, I would love to see how fast they got up and what they did and what was their favorite hold and all of that. Because back in those days, they had to be decent athletes to do that.
Totally. All right, Martin. Farhaven, available now on INSP. Also, what other projects do you have going on where people could check this stuff out?
Well, they should go to Peacock and watch the Hallmark movie I did with Jesse called A Taste of Love. And it aired on Hallmark a couple of weeks ago. And it's a lovely story. I play a chef. It's not at all violent. It's a romance. It's a romance about food. And there's a lot of stuff coming out. There's a movie about wrestling, about the first female wrestler. It was directed by Ash Abelson, who's the son of John Abelson, who directed Karate Kid and Rocky. And it comes out, it's called the Queen of Wrestling, and it comes out probably within the year. But it's a marvelous picture. And it's all about the first lady wrestler.
Awesome. Well, that's great. A lot of great stuff. Appreciate it, Martin. Thanks again.
Take care of yourself.
Yeah. All right. That was a special simulcast of the Neil Haley Show and Celebrity Interviews live from the Grotto. Greg Hanna, guys. Take care.